Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 8 of the Memoirs of a Movie Stand-In podcast. My name is Greg Anderson, and this time I really am going to talk about the production of episode 104 of a series called Promised Land, which started its run on the CBS television network in the fall of 1996. Episode 4 was the second episode aired after the pilot episode of Promised Land, and this one was called The Prodigy. Now, this episode starts as the Green family rolls into Evanston, Wyoming, and they're there to participate, or at least view, the Graham Riley Music Festival, which apparently happens every year in Evanston, Wyoming. Now, so far, the only thing that's not fictional that I've mentioned is Evanston, Wyoming. Graham Riley, there's no such thing. Graham Riley Music Festival, there's no such thing. But within the context of the story, Graham Riley was this big rock star, very influential, everybody loved his music. Back in, well, let's just say the late 60s, early 70s, somewhere in that neighborhood. So in his honor, at his hometown of Evanston, Wyoming, they have this music festival every year. Now, Evanston, Wyoming is not that far from Salt Lake City. You could get there in a couple of hours. But we did not go to Evanston, Wyoming to film anything for our Graham Riley Music Festival show. We did it all in either Lehigh, Utah, or Salt Lake City. Lehigh is, a good 45-minute drive from downtown Salt Lake City. A little town that has a nice kind of main street with the old-style main street atmosphere as you drive down the road. So we took a couple of blocks of main street and decked it out to look like I think they were trying to evoke the feeling of Woodstock, some big music festival like that. A lot of guys with, you know, tie-dye and, you know, celebrating the 60s kind of thing, sort of a hippie mentality, if you will, of this atmosphere that we created along Lehigh's Main Street. And then we had, let me see, we used Liberty Park in Salt Lake City for other features of Evanston, Wyoming. So the place where the music festival actually takes place, we set up a stage and chairs and things like that and did some night scenes of people performing on stage. And we did that in Liberty Park in Salt Lake City, and also sort of a campground where the Green family has their Airstream trailer. We did that also Liberty Park. Now, let's see. One of the main issues they were trying to talk about in this particular episode of Promised Land was illicit drug use. So this was a way to cover that topic, and also to acknowledge that for many parents of teenagers today, trying to tell their kids never use drugs, it may seem to be a bit of a contradiction, because what if you were a little bit experimental back in the day when you were a teenager and you tried some of these drugs, and now what are you going to do to tell your kids, hey, by the way, never use drugs, without sounding like a complete hypocrite? How can you, you know, that's sort of the struggle, the social issue here that was a main focus of this episode. So the way they decided to cover that in the story was to go ahead and let's just say that when Claire Green was younger, she dabbled in these sorts of things. And so now how is she going to tell her teenage kids, by the way, you should never use drugs? And so at first, you know, she's kind of trying to hide it from the kids. But as they get here to the Graham Riley Music Festival, well, Dinah decides to, as part of her schoolwork, she's being sort of homeschooled on the road, she's going to write a big report about Graham Riley. And she goes down to the local library, which we happen to use part of the Salt Lake County Library System, one of the library branches on 9th West in Salt Lake City, sort of the Rose Park area of Salt Lake City, somewhere right in there. I don't know every neighborhood of Salt Lake City that I could name it, but So we use that library, and what happens is Dinah finds a photograph as she's researching Graham Riley, and she sees him hanging out with some friends, and she sees her own mother, Claire Greene, well, before she was married, I guess, in this photograph with Graham Riley, and sees one of the other people in the photograph is holding a joint, a marijuana cigarette. And so, you know, at one point she flat out asks her mother, without revealing that she's seen this photograph, she asks her mother if her mother ever used drugs, and Claire's response is, "I never wanted to." And of course, Dinah knows that that's a very evasive answer, and mom's lying to me, and why should I believe her on anything? And so there's a little tension there. As far as the photograph that we actually used in the episode of Graham Riley, I'm not sure who they actually got to play the part of Graham Riley in this episode, because all you do is see him in photographs. The other thing about Graham Riley, and as far as the story goes, is that Graham Riley himself died of a drug overdose years earlier. So we had the image of Graham Riley around. We had, you know, some photographs and also a painting for a big banner with the image of Graham Riley. And I really don't know who they got to put his image up. But the other people in the photograph, the real scandalous photograph that Dinah found, were, of course, Wendy Phillips as Claire Greene, or the unmarried Claire Greene when she was younger. Also, the assistant director of the episode was featured in that photograph, and I believe he was the one who just, you know, was casually holding this marijuana cigarette between his fingers. And I think, if I remember right, the other person in the photograph was actually Austin O'Brien's mother. Austin O'Brien, who played the part of Josh Greene on the series. He was 15 or 16 years old at the time. So he had a parent or a guardian who would, you know, stay out here with him and be on set with him and what have you. So his mother was out here for most of that time to act as his parent or guardian on set. And so I think they dragged her because, you know, she's this nice-looking blonde lady with long hair that could look like maybe, you know, someone from the 60s or 70s might have a hairstyle like that. So they used her in the shot as well. So there's familiar faces with Graham Riley in that episode, people that, you know, for the most part behind the scenes, but it was fun to see them on TV with Graham Riley in that picture. All right, so what else we got going on in this episode? Well, we had Gail O'Grady, whom I had met a couple years earlier. Well, I guess only about a year earlier, when it was the miniseries called Nothing Lasts Forever. So here was Gail O'Grady again, and she was playing the part of Graham Riley's widow, and she was very protective of her teenage son, who was the prodigy. He was Graham Riley's son, so he was just a musical genius, could play any instrument, just, you know, a natural, knew everything about music and was this genius. And, well, the last thing that Graham Riley's widow wants is for her own son now to take after his father and become this famous musician with sex, drugs, rock and roll, all those problems, and ruin his life. So she has forbidden his son, forbade? Well, anyway, she doesn't want her son to play music at all. She's doing everything within her power to keep him away from music. And so then there gets to be a little bit of a conflict between Claire Greene and the widow of Graham Riley about, no, you need to nurture your son's talent. He's a truly talented individual, and his gift, he's got a gift, and all these things. So we had all that going on. All right, so what happened was we also had, as a special guest star on this episode, a man by the name of Joe Walsh. Yeah, that one. Yeah, Joe Walsh, the guy who used to be with the Eagles and also had a solo career and would kind of jump back and forth between his solo career and the Eagles. And yeah, Joe Walsh, he was there. He was on our show and never sang or played any music on the show. Oh, it killed us. We got Joe Walsh and we're not going to like have him play a song on the show. Oh, but Joe Walsh at the time, you know, it was about the same time, maybe a few weeks later, I saw him on another show, like a sitcom, just playing a small role. So I guess, you know, maybe for a while there, he wanted to try acting and, you know, see what he could do with it. And he did a fine job acting on our show. And then I saw him on this other show. And so I thought, well, maybe he wants to be an actor now. So I'm kind of sad that it didn't work out, or maybe he decided not to after he tried it a little bit. But we had him on our show, and he was there to be an actor, not to be a musician. In the story, Joe Walsh played the owner of a music store called RJ's Music Shop or RJ's Music Store or something like that. We had the exterior of the RJ Music Store down in Lehigh, Utah. And then we built a set for the interior of the store, and that was in our warehouse that we used, you know, near our Promised Land office. Well, actually, the warehouse was adjoining the Promised Land office. They were all basically under one roof. Anyway, so that's where we had our music store. And it was just fun to have Joe Walsh there. But again, let the guy play some music. But they did a little something subtle, and you may have noticed this if you watched the episode. As they came back from a commercial break, they showed the exterior of the store for just a couple seconds and then cut to the interior of the store for a scene. And this is something you see all the time. They call that exterior shot an establishing shot. In the movie industry. So, you know, you have that establishing shot, and that shows you where the scene takes place inside that building, inside that house, and whatever. And as they came back from the commercial, you started to hear the some strains from the song, you know, Life's Been Good to Me So Far, a very, you know, probably the most famous Joe Walsh song. Well, I don't know, Rocky Mountain Way, In the City. Oh, there's a lot of great Joe Walsh songs, but that's one of the best known Joe Walsh songs, that Life's Been Good to Me So Far. Yeah, so they played a little bit of that, and then sort of let it trail off into the background as the rest of the scene went on. So I'm sure they got a little bit of an easier time obtaining the rights to use that song because Joe Walsh was in the episode, and it was a nice tip of the hat without actually saying, this is Joe Walsh. No, he was RJ, the music store guy, of course. So, and I also, I thought that was funny because one of our producers of the show who took charge of a lot of the post-production work down in Los Angeles, he was RJ. And so whenever they used names of people involved with the show in the show, it was always kind of funny to me. So it's like sometimes, let's say you might see a chalkboard in the background of, a school scene, and they've got a list of names on the chalkboard. And so a lot of times that would be like the last names of people who are actually on the production crew, and you wouldn't have known that just watching the show, and there may not have even been a shot of that chalkboard that was close enough that you could actually read the names. But it was fun to be on set, and when, you know, the guys from the art department would stick names on the board that were, you know, the names of guys on the crew. That was always fun. It's all these little details that it's fun to do on a TV show that, you know, it's all insider stuff, but it is fun. All right, so let's see. We've got this episode 104. All right, so one of the other elements of this story for episode 104 was that Josh, played by Austin O'Brien, Josh Green, one of the regulars on the show, he dreams of being a great musician. But, you know, he struggles. He's just a teenager. He's not that great. But spending a few minutes with Graham Riley's son, Trevor, who is a musical genius, and all of a sudden Trevor just blows Josh out of the water with his musical talent and abilities, which is a little bit off-putting to Josh, especially when Josh's mother goes on and on praising what a great musician Trevor is, and Josh is like, what am I, chopped liver? You know, kind of an attitude. So that was one of the elements of the story. And something that they kept coming back to throughout the run of the series, that every now and then they'd make mention of the fact that Josh wants to go to Nashville, wants to be a great musician. This is what he aspires to do. And, you know, somehow there was always something holding him back. You know, he just wasn't good enough. That's kind of sad to me. Of course, you know, I don't know where they would have taken that storyline if they'd ever actually let Josh be a very accomplished musician. But when it came to, actually, there's a scene, sort of the culmination of the episode, where you see Josh on stage at sort of almost like an amateur night or open mic night sort of situation at the Graham Riley Music Festival. And Trevor joins him on stage, and they play a little song together, which they say was a song originally written by this legendary Graham Riley. And, you know, you listen to the song, and I know this is a challenge for the musical director of Promised Land to come up with some song that's supposed to be, you know, the song of a world-renowned musical genius, Graham Riley, you know. And so you listen to it, and it's, you know, it's an okay song, but it's not. It's kind of like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. You ever see that show? They talk about in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure that eventually, you know, these guys have been time traveling, so they know what the future holds. And they know that someday the music of Bill and Ted is going to align the planets and unify the universe and, you know, all these great things, that their music is going to transform life as we know it because it's such powerful music. So then in the sequel called Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, you actually hear them, you know, reach this point where they are playing music, and it's supposed to be this music that is powerful enough to, you know, cause world peace and unify the universe and whatever else they say that their music is going to do. And so you hear it and you go, well, it's okay, but I don't believe that this is music that's going to change the world. So I guess I think about that when you've got the Graham Riley Music Festival, and here they're finally going to play a song, supposedly one of the more well-known songs from Graham Riley, and you kind of go, well, you know, it's all right. It's not a bad song, but it's not like, this song is going to change my life. Same challenge, and I don't begrudge the music director of Promised Land or whoever had the assignment of writing this little piece of music. But what I was going to say was that when it came time for them to perform this bit of music on screen, you know, this is one thing you might wonder about. Well, do the actors actually play their own instruments when something like this happens? Well, in this case, yeah, sort of. I know that the Austin O'Brien and the other actor who was playing the part of Trevor Riley, they really wanted to play their own instruments. And so they worked hard to learn the song and did a pretty good job. I'm sure that whatever they played was sort of replaced. A lot of times what we would do is we had a pre-recorded piece of music in situations like this, and the actor would just sort of play along to the recording. And then in the final editing, you know, they mix it all together and make it seamless. So this is what the actors were doing, these two teenage actors on screen. They were doing their best, and I think they were doing a very credible job of playing along with the recording and certainly making it look like they were actually playing the song. But at the very least, at least showing that, yes, they knew what notes were supposed to be played. And they were doing a pretty good job of it. Not perfect, of course, but better than you might see sometimes when you see an actor who's supposedly playing a bit of music on any movie, TV show. Sometimes it's like they really don't put much effort into it at all. And my hats are off to the young actors who were on Promised Land, who really did put a lot of effort into learning those songs so they could play along and make it look credible on screen. So, all right. I don't know if I have any other stories from the production of episode 104 of Promised Land, except, well, okay, a couple things here that come to mind. They have this little mention as Russell and Claire are just kind of walking by themselves during the daytime through some of the venue area for the Graham Riley Music Festival, and they're both reminiscing about how they went to Woodstock. And so, if I remember correctly, they tried to establish that, oh yeah, both Russell Green and Claire Green, before they were married, before they knew each other, had gone to Woodstock. the original Woodstock, they didn't meet each other there. They were both kind of marveling at the idea that they were both there, but they didn't. And I'm thinking, well, to me, that was a little bit over the top to think that, oh yeah, these two went to Woodstock. And I don't know how many, you know, what percentage of American youth went to Woodstock, but it still seemed a little far-fetched to me that, yeah, both of them, they just happened to have gone to Woodstock. I don't want to harp on that too much, but it's just one of those things. It sort of makes it like a Robert Zemeckis movie, like, you know, Back to the Future or Forrest Gump or whatever. You start pretending, well, yeah, they went to Woodstock and, you know, they were there for, you know, and someone was assassinated or, you know. It could be just a little bit over the top, so. All right, a little criticism there. And then, of course, we did get the great Celeste Holm to round off the end of the episode. She sang a song. She goes on there and is a very well-known song by Crosby, Stills, Nash. Or was it also And Young? Anyway, she gets up there and surprises everyone when Grandma sings. And so that was great because, of course, Celeste Holm, a great entertainer from the golden age of Hollywood. And, you know, we didn't get Joe Walsh to play for us on the show, but we got Celeste Holm to sing for us, and that was pretty cool. So that's my memoir of episode 104 of Promised Land. The next up, I'll talk about episode 105, and oh boy, yeah, special guest Cloris Leachman. And for those of you recently who've seen her on the old Dancing with the Stars thing and thought, wow, that's a colorful lady, I gotta tell you, a wildly entertaining person, Cloris Leachman. So I'll talk a little bit about that and the rest of the production of episode 105 of Promised Land on the next episode of the Memoirs of a Movie Stand-In podcast. Thanks for joining me once again. Remember, the official show notes of the Memoirs of a Movie Stand-In podcast are available at this place, utahstandin.blogspot.com. That's utahstandin.blogspot.com. And then I'll take your emails if you want to send me a quick little note. You know, I hope an encouraging and positive note, please. And my email address is moviestandin@gmail.com. moviestandin@gmail.com. Because I'm the movie stand-in. It's me, Greg Anderson. Once again, thanks, and watch for the next new episode of the Memoirs of a Movie Stand-In right here, Thursday nights at 8, 7 Central. You have a great day.